the Forged and Unbroken podcast.
John, you're from, is it Berkeley, West Virginia? Are you a West Virginia born and bred kind of guy?
No, I was born and raised in Leesburg, Virginia, Loudoun County.
Oh, okay.
And went to school in Buchanan, West Virginia for 2 years and then moved to Berkeley County. Met my wife and back in 2001. So I've been here ever since.
Gotcha. When did you get into Berkeley Fire?
I want to say it was about 2018, 2017. I got back in the fire department. I was in the fire department in Leesburg as a cadet member and a junior member and then a senior volunteer member. Got out of when I went to school, kind of wasn't a part of anything, but I still watched the YouTube videos and things like that. I think never really got it out of my blood. And when my kids got older, I wanted to get back in the fire station, so I joined the local volunteer fire station. COVID-19 came, and I was driving tractor trailer across country. Wow. And I didn't have to go back to work if I didn't want to during COVID-19. So yeah. I stayed at home, and the fire chief at the time, who's now a county commissioner, him and I had a little bit of a relationship just from him being in the fire station with his personnel and me being around the fire station hanging out. And he hired me part-time, and then they opened up three positions for full time, and I went ahead and tested and got hired on full time. Awesome. So I sold my truck and here I am.
Damn, that's cool. That's I can only imagine driving trucks, man. It's not just driving behind the wheel. It's a tough job, I'm sure.
Yeah, I moved furniture, so I like to say I stayed in a little bit of shape.
Yeah.
You know, I did it, but what's different is that most people did this firefighting job in their 20s, and I didn't pick it up until I got into my 40s full time. So
yeah, wow.
It was I did my careers backwards.
Hey, good on you, man. That's cool. Now, I love West Virginia. You know, I'm Maryland born and raised, but anytime I get the opportunity to go, you know, hiking or whatever, there's my wife's side of the family, both sides are from like deep West Virginia as well. So it's definitely in the family. But as far as the fire service is concerned, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about at least your area. And we'll keep it to like Berkeley. What are some of the things that operationally or culturally might be a little different from where you're working with Berkeley and surrounding areas? Like, let's just talk staffing, logistics. What are some of the things that you all operate might be different from other places?
Yeah, so Berkeley County, West Virginia, it's a different animal. The state controls a lot of stuff. Just the counties don't have a lot of input. And Berkeley County Fire is the only county fire department in the state of West Virginia, paid county fire department. Oh, okay. All the other career fire departments in the state of West Virginia are within municipalities. And legislature has an entire section dedicated to municipality and their fire services and their like civil service and things like that. We are not civil service here in Berkeley County. So we are the icebreakers. With that being said, the state sets the rules for the volunteer fire stations. The volunteer fire chief is the head, the ultimate say in their fire district. And the only person that has any authority over them is the state fire marshal.
Wow.
So within Berkeley County, you have five different volunteer fire stations that surround the city of Martinsburg. Martinsburg has their own set of rules. Mm-hmm. And then you have five different jurisdictions that kind of run on their own SOGs, SOPs. Okay. They're trying to get a countywide stuff. So it's almost like operating in five different countries.
Yeah, no kidding. And I would imagine you all are still running some version of mutual aid. So when you're running together, that just creates, I'm assuming, a whole host of issues potentially.
Yeah, there's we refer to it as a sandbox mentality here.
Okay.
They don't want you in my sandbox. You don't want us in your sandbox type of deal.
Yeah.
The younger guys that are coming in, I'm going to put myself in that category as the younger generation that came after the Berkeley Fire started getting into the fire stations, they're trying to get rid of that. The younger generation sees that we have to be able to work together. There's going to be places that the second due engine is going to be first due engine on scene. Mm-hmm. And they may establish command, which is completely fine with me. It doesn't matter to me who does it. We're all within the county.
Yeah.
A lot of some of the older generation, and I don't want to knock the volunteers, but some of the hardcore volunteers don't want either Berkeley Fire or that mutual aid company in their area calling any shots.
Yeah.
And that like I said, that's kind of starting to go by the wayside. They're being outnumbered now, and it's not a popular opinion anymore.
Yeah, no, I can totally relate to that. We have, just in my area and surrounding jurisdictions, there are highly densely populated areas, you know, around the nation's capital, the state's capital. And then you have some more of the rural areas that are just coming online, maybe with the career side of the department. And I can totally empathize with just the growing pain that's involved going from major cultural shifts of what was all volunteer or maybe part-time, or there is a small career presence.
They got their personnel on a SAFER grant before Berkeley County Fire became an actual fire department within the state. They run three shifts, 24 on 48 off, and they're staffed with three people on shift, every shift. The other four departments run 0600 to 1800 Monday through Friday.
Okay.
With two personnel on shift.
Gotcha. So it's highly unlikely for anybody in your area to be like a dedicated or known 3-4 plus staffing on.
Not unless you have some volunteers that are hanging out at the fire station.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then, you know, we do get lucky sometimes, and there's a couple of volunteers that fill the truck out.
Yeah. And you're whatever first out the door. So it can be everything from you're jumping on a medic run all the way to a tanker, whatever, going out the door. You jump.
The ambulance service is separate. They have a separate EMS system. This house, we do have a medic unit that is staffed 24 hours a day out of here. And there's six stations that have medic units at them within the station. They have their own stuff, but like I said, they're their own agency completely.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting, man. There's just a lot of balls to juggle.
Yeah.
In your area, yeah. I imagine, man. So now, one of the core things that we wanted to discuss when we met in 2020, you were involved in a Mayday line of duty event. And now, out of respect to the family, the department, and just, you know, litigation going on, we're not going to get into any of the specifics, but we're going to talk about some of the public and more global things that are out there, just so we can learn from your all's experiences. Now, I'll kind of let you build it and set it up for whatever you're comfortable. And like what you said is public, and we'll respect that. But 2020, you all had a barn fire where, you know, crazy things happen.
Yeah. With that evening it started, or that night, it was our early morning. It's known it was an arson related fire. There was a trailer that was called in first. The first due engine company responded to that with a mutual aid in from Jefferson County. They were already on that. Station 30 was dispatched for a car accident. And that's how I ended up on it. We were on a rescue engine and responded. I want to say we were second due to that car accident, and the first due engine arrived on location, put us in service. We were sitting in available, you know, to go en route to the fire. And we asked the officer if they needed any assistance, and they went ahead and sent us to the barn fire. Third engine in, we went, you know, straight into an exterior attack. There had already been previous collapse that was noted. The other arriving units showed up there, and they went to work. And then there was the collapse, and the group of firefighters were trying to get out of that collapse area. And one of them unfortunately didn't make it. Mm. And the officer in charge, he was the one that actually called the mayday, because there was people that were down. And we went to work getting the guys out and you know, getting an assessment of what we actually had going on there. My role after, you know, things had kind of, the dust had kind of settled, was we still had a barn on fire. We still needed to go to work. Went to work, and we eventually, we got it out early in the morning. The sun came up, we went home. It wasn't until then, I was riding back, and it really hit me what had happened, that I went to work to do a job that we trained to do, and then one of the guys isn't going back to his station. His boots are going to be left, you know, on the floor by the truck or by his locker where they were at. Just kind of thinking about that, being kind of sleep deprived. I've been studying for a test, and you know, earlier the day before, and so I was kind of mentally drained. And then that happened, and it kind of built up, and just sitting back and thinking of all the little things that came about, and that stuff started to wear on me for a while. My wife, she took the most of the punch,
yeah,
from it. I was irritable, didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to discuss it with her. I remember getting home that morning, and she was still laying in bed, and I went to lay down, and I just looked at her and I said, "Fireman died last night." And that was kind of the end of the discussion. But she was great. She stuck by me the whole time. The funeral, I think it was roughly about 2 weeks later when the funeral happened. I went to the funeral. That was kind of closure for me of the, it was time to regroup. And, you know, I wasn't unaware that bad things could happen, but it was, that was reality, that bad things do happen.
Sure.
So it was, at that point in time, I didn't know the individual. I didn't know the firefighter. That was killed. But I was able to, it was just somebody lost their life, you know, doing the job that I love to do.
On a call.
So after this, I'm sorry.
Yeah. On a call that you were running alongside with them.
Yeah, right. There, right.
Present. Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been anybody that was there.
Yeah.
Could have been anybody. So after the funeral, you know, I regrouped. I said, you know, we got to figure this out. We got to learn from it. I was a very young officer at the time on the volunteer side of things. As a matter of fact, I think I had just finished my officer classes and was coming in. That was my first year as a lieutenant on the volunteer side of things.
Okay. Wow.
So I started thinking about what would I have done? That could have been me in charge. Like next week, that could be me.
Yeah.
And, so I did a lot of deep thinking.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the funny things was one night I was laying in bed and I was thinking, you know, how did this happen? What caused it? Was there any kind of physical things that we did? Like, did we change the chemistry of anything to make things happen? And I called, this is my assistant chief at the time. I called him. I said, I need you to meet me at the fire station. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And we met at the fire station. We sat on the bumper of the truck and discussed it. And, you know, he was a big help through the whole time mentally. He dealt with it because he was there as well. He dealt with it in his way. I dealt with it my way. And really my way of dealing with it through then was to just be better, to do something every single day that would make me more aware of my situation, the situational surroundings. Physical fitness, go to the gym, get in better shape. Don't let, you know, your age, be a crutch, you know, don't be the guy that I'm just going to drive and pump. I'm going to be in there with him, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the few days later after that incident, we ran a house fire, and my whole mentality was, there's a bunch of young guys going, I'm going with them. I can't not be there without, you know, and let them do this themselves. And then I ended up on a at the time I was working part time for Berkeley Fire. They stationed me at on a 24-hour shift, and we got dispatched for a structure fire over in Jefferson County. And the whole way there, I was like, all you have to do is walk through the threshold. That's all you got to do. If you can get past the front door, you're fine. Fire was pretty much contained and controlled at the time we got there. I was with the guys that I knew. You know, I knew they cared about me. I cared about them. Masked up on the porch, clicked in. We went into ventilation and you know, the hook ceiling. So once I got past that, I got back in the truck and I was like, I'm good. I can do this. I can move forward. And it was just, you know, time needed to work its way. But it's something you think about on a regular basis. You know, it's something you don't just put behind you.
Oh my God. Yeah, man, you have said so many things that I can relate to for my men and I, when we went through our situation, talking to other people around the nation and some of the things that they have gone through and experienced, so many similarities. And I appreciate you outlining it the way you have. Just like you said, like getting, just we'll start from the end, and we'll back it up. Like you were just saying how you like basically had to get back on the horse. I certainly felt that, you know, like, when's that next fire going to come? How am I going to be able to operate? You know, can I still hold up my end of the bargain? And I really appreciate your mindset of you're using this as an opportunity for growth. There's so many people that could have a chip on their shoulder, could use it to breed further pessimism or negativity. And I'm not saying that there aren't instances of that. Like, there are certain times when I had my weak moments, and everybody does, but you're sitting here and you're introspective enough to say, no, I want to be there. I want to use this to grow. I want to get more physically fit. I want to be able to lead the younger guys in and know that I can still do it and be there with them. You know, it's that sense of security, of being a provider, of showing leadership that comes from really hard situations, and that's just going to breed further growth, further resiliency, and it's just going to help you combat other sides of, you can call it post-traumatic stress or whatever. So many people can fall victim to it, and they allow themselves to stay in that place. And it seems like to me you tackled that head on, and I really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've done some work with veterans. I was never in the military, but I've done some work with them, and I've seen guys that do it. I'll never compare myself to going through what any of them have gone through. I'll never take that away from them. Because I've heard some stories, and I feel that my story doesn't even, you know, it's not even first rung to what they have. And I don't think I was scared to be labeled with the PTSD. It was the fact that I think I wanted to leave that title, or that for somebody that really, really had it, there was a way that I could work out, you know, I wanted or work through it. I've noticed that. And even to this day, we run, you know, that bad wreck, you know, or that about a year ago, we had one of my partners and I, we had a misgrab when we grabbed a guy and we thought we had it, but then turned out it wasn't. The guy didn't make it. Mm. And those things there, I was able, the guys that were on those calls, those are the guys I can talk to. And you can air it out there. You know, you know, what did you do? Did you do something that was wrong? You know, I know when we missed a grab, it was one of those things where I failed at what I was trained to do. I didn't do my job. And it wasn't that you failed to do your job, but you did everything you possibly could do. If you could go back and say, I did everything I was trained to do, and I did it at 110%, 200%, we did what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I had a lieutenant one time tell me, and this was after a pediatric arrest, he said, no matter how high a training you have, no matter what you do on that job, if you perform above and beyond your skill level, you will never make the final decision.
Yeah.
What happens. And I said, you know what, man, That makes sense. He goes, you're not going to save them all. You can't do it. He goes, as long as you do your best and do what you're trained to do, you can get through this stuff. And I've banked on a lot of that statement.
Man, I really appreciate that.
Get through some of those calls.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think that's really powerful. Your training, your mindset, your physicality, it validates a lot of what we do on this job. You don't want to be left wondering, you know, what if. And at the same time, though, you can do everything right and bad things may still happen. And that's something mm-hmm. that we need to learn and grow from. I really appreciate your colleague saying that and then having that stick with you and being like, yeah, no, I still did everything that I could and the cards were still stacked against us. Because that could really, mindset wise, that could really hurt a lot of people. And then you go into the next call and then you start second guessing yourself. And when we start doing mm-hmm. that, that's when, you know, bad things can happen. We can't allow ourselves to second guess ourselves in these really bad situations, man. So yeah, something else that stuck out to me is that you are talking to your guys. You're not bottling this up. You are getting information out there. You are saying, hey, how do we fix this? And you're opening lines of communication up and you're learning from each other. You're also a teacher at that point. And I think all too often we fall victim to just bottling it up or keeping it inside, or maybe we're just not going to talk about it. And I'm not saying that some people can't because maybe they're struggling or taking in that information in a different way, but it sounds like you are taking this head on and like, no, we're going to make something good out of this.
Yeah. We have 21 guys in the department, 22, including the chief. And we have guys that are, you know, 2 and 3 years in the fire service and guys all the way up to, you know, close to probably 40 years in the fire service. And they've watched it grow and they all have, everybody has a place in being able to help or give something to one another. I mean, we bicker back and forth about who takes the trash out, who doesn't wash the truck, you know, who doesn't clean the dishes and stuff like that. But I'll be honest with you, there's not a single one of these guys I work with that I would not trust yeah. on a fire or to come back to the fire station and talk to.
Hell yeah.
There's every single one of them I would lean on if need be.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's awesome. I love that sentiment. And something else that just kind of is sticking with me is that you're a 22 person department and you know, a lot of people automatically assume West Virginia being pretty rural. You'd have your downtown metro sections, especially with your area. That's, I know it's building like crazy. But it's not some big city department, right? You said 22 guys. You're the unit president of 22 guys. And some of my buddies in St. Louis I just talked to, they were saying it doesn't matter that we're from a big city department. You're running similar incidents where people can get hurt, people can get killed. You're running house fires, people are trapped, pediatric arrests. Like, just because you're in a 22 person department in an otherwise somewhat rural section doesn't mean that you get it any easier. And so that preparation in some cases is even more important because your resources don't run as deep and funding may not be as profound. So, man, just the fact that you're keeping that mentality and trying to hold the high standard, you know, you're still running all the same calls that everybody else in the nation is with more or less, I mean, less resources, all that. So, how do you feel about that? Especially being a union president and now also experiencing a line of duty death. What are some of these challenges that you're trying to overcome right now? Or things that
from the local side of things, we're, you know, trying to build a relationship with the county commission and, our county administrators. We don't have a whole lot of protection and West Virginia is a right to work state with no collective bargaining. I've been able to sit down with one of the commissioners who was a past fire chief of Berkeley County Fire and a retired captain from the city of Martinsburg and a very strong union member within the state of West Virginia and the state association. He's helped me out a lot. But, you know, with trying to build this bond, I'm not looking for a fight with anybody, just looking for, you know, to better some stuff. I know, you know, some people look at West Virginia, a pretty conservative state. This area is very conservative as well. Some of the county officials look at the union as we're a bunch of thugs and we want, you know, a whole lot for nothing, which is not the case. So trying to take baby steps and walk and say, hey, look, this is what we want to do. Try to put out there and to the public, good things. And we put, last year we ran a coat drive. We bought 90 coats for elementary school children last year and distributed them amongst the middle school and elementary schools. So this year, my goal is to do more. We got out there to some of the public and some of the businesses, and some people want to jump on board with that. So I want to at least double that number this year.
Awesome.
So, you know, from the union side, that's where we're at. Now we're getting ready to leave Wednesday for the state convention in Morgantown. Hopefully get some of the state behind us to help us out to get a little bit stronger. But other than that, demographic wise, and in Berkeley County, the largest growing county in the state of West Virginia, fire wise, between all five volunteer fire stations, we run approximately 8,500 calls a year from all five stations. Berkeley County fire answers probably, I'm just shooting some numbers out there. I really don't have the numbers and statistics. I just know at this station, Berkeley County fire answers about 60% of those calls.
Okay. Wow.
Just on the fire side, with the two people that are on shift, it would be higher than that if we were 24 hours across the board.
Sure.
And if the fail rate with the volunteer system is not growing.
Yeah.
You get guys that come in and say, yeah, I want to drive a ride the fire truck. But then when they get to the training and what they have to get on the fire truck, they don't commit. It's not what they wanted to do. Or we get guys from the city that live out this way, that work DC, Baltimore, yeah. Some Montgomery. A young boy just went to Howard. He started off in the volunteer system, and you know, they want to be part of the fire department because they want to run fire. They want to run the job, and that's about it. They're not much into the fundraiser part of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's fine. You know, we'll take their help anywhere we can get it from the Berkeley fire standpoint, you know.
Yeah.
It's sure. An extra person on the truck.
Yeah.
But those guys also, it's funny when they come in here and they start talking to us, get a guy from Montgomery comes in and he says, yeah, he goes, I have one job to do. That's force the door. Or I go in and search. Once my job's over with, I burn a bottle. I go to eat rehab. I might as well go on the rig and go home. Mm-hmm. Here it's a little bit different. And, when I tell this to guys that I've been to class with from Baltimore, DC, so on, they do their third party trainings and stuff like that. And some of the third party training classes I've been to, they think it's wild, but we typically run two guys on the engine, the guy on in the seat, we show up working fire. He gets out, he does a 360. The driver usually puts the truck in pump gear, stretches the line to wherever that guy in the seat wants the line stretched to. Once the 360 is complete, he usually forces the door, goes ahead and masks up while the driver goes back to the rig to charge the line and finish, gets dressed and grab a tool. Pumps nowadays, you don't have to babysit them, set the pressure and go. Yeah. And we know with our engine out of here, we have 1,000 gallons of water. We're looking at approximately 5 minutes of water. We need to make a difference in 5 minutes or we need to get out. Basically where we're situated at, if we pull out of the parking lot, off the apron and go to the east, we've got resources coming quickly. If we turn to the west, it could be 10 minutes or so before we have resources coming in behind us. So two men on working fire is not uncommon for the first 5-10 minutes.
That's incredible, man. I think so many people lose sight that so much of the nation still operates under that because you just don't hear about it as much. in a resource-rich department, we take those things for granted sometimes. I mean, you're a professional mm-hmm. gear department and you are going into these house fires with two people, one of them, which is your driver, doing all the first due responsibilities, getting dressed, and then you're going in there together. And I think for some of that, you know, some people might claim, you know, the OSHA and the RIT teams and all that, you're coming at it from a point, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, of like a moral obligation to just go and do the right thing with the resources that you have, and people lose sight of that.
So we, you know, I'm big in the training thing. I love training classes. I'd really like third party training classes.
Yeah.
They all have something to offer. Some of them I disagree with, some of them I like. One pretty big here in the state of West Virginia is trained to perform under pressure, and I like their mentality. It's a lot of like you talked about at your seminar with the crawl walk run mm-hmm. method or theory, and 10 to 1 of their classes, it was geared towards short staffing. Other than the actual firefighting techniques and stuff like that, they brought in the science behind it. They brought in the numbers. And what hit me the most was, it's 2024. Not everybody drives. Grandma may be at the house. People are leaving kids at home at younger and younger ages. Just because the car's not in the driveway doesn't mean the kid's not in the house or the grandma's not in the house. And the numbers of, you know, reported houses evacuated, but then they find a victim. Those things really hit home with me, because we have a lot of that in this area.
Sure.
Abandoned structures, not quite as many as probably the city, like Baltimore, DC, things like that. But we do have abandoned structures, and we do have a heavy homeless population of, you know, drug addicts and stuff like that. They could be squatting in those houses.
Yeah.
So we've got to go.
Yeah. I think, West Virginia at times, and I'm coming at this from a place of love and the absolute most respect, because it is a state near dear to me, is that it does kind of carry a certain stigma at times. But I've done a lot of traveling throughout the state, and you look at when driving through some of these downtown cities that once were robust from whatever the industry was, whether it's, you know, coal, railways, whatever, that now, because of politics and industry changes, whatever, they aren't as robust as they once were. Some of them are still thriving, doing well, but there are a lot of abandoned structures, like you said, the homeless population. So if you would dig in a little bit more on that, like, you can't rest on your principles. You know that there are the potential for people being inside these structures are high. For you not being a resource rich department, how are you motivating and conducting your preparation for your shift in your department? Like, the physical training, and then we'll break that down into two parts, your physical fitness, and then the actual training and preparation. Because I think in many cases, it's more important the tone that you're setting compared to the guys from the major cities.
Yeah. So here at the house I'm at, we're probably one of the youngest, crews. We have three guys that are stationed out here on a regular basis. One of my partners, he goes to the gym religiously every morning. He's at the gym at 3:30
wow.
every morning. And he's a monster. He's a big guy, but he's a farm strong big guy. You know, he's
yeah,
just a big dude and powerful.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, he's one of those guys that we pushed on a house fire one time, and he said, man, that place was junked up, man. I was tripping over all kinds of stuff, and I was behind him pulling the line for him. And I looked at him, I said, I didn't run into anything. And he's like, and then I realized he was a bulldozer. He moved it all out of the way for me, you know. he was like a blocking back, but he's aggressive. Then I got my other partner. He's a younger guy, not too long out of college. Played football in school. Played football for the high school, Martinsburg, 4-time state football champion. He's a bull. Yeah. He's a hard hitter. And he trained under some very aggressive guys. I will say most of the guys in our department are extremely aggressive. We'll go until they physically can't take it any longer. And then they still push past that a lot of times. And that's how he learned under those guys. Mm-hmm. So it's a blessing to have him there.
Yeah.
I brought back to them some third party stuff, you know, with the being short crewed. I learned a method was referred to long side, short side search. So instead of like pulling line in the door a little bit at a time, we take the coupling and go through the door and, with a nozzle, that way we take 50 feet of hose inside the door with us right off the bat. As long as I can stay, you know, I can hear him, see him, or feel him, I'm good to go. And I search basically one side of the hose line. And then we'll go back and we're searching the side of the hose line, you know, where the threat to life is the highest.
Yeah.
So we're going in and using that hose line. We're not afraid to just put water. We're not pushing down just till we get to the fire room. We're going to go ahead and cool the area best we can.
Yeah.
Put some water on the wall, ceiling, floor, eat up some of the BTUs, and we're going to keep on pushing.
Awesome. Awesome. You said that word aggressive and you kind of touched on it. What is from your perspective with your all's culture, what does aggressive firefighting mean to you? Because a lot of people think it's a bad word. It's a nasty word. And I don't know what little bit I know about you. I don't think you would agree with that. So what does that mean?
Yeah, no, I know it's been kicked around in conversation here too, around the kitchen table. You know, are they aggressive? Or are they stupid? You know, are they a cowboy? Or are they not? Are they just being dumb? You know, one of the guys that works for us, he came from Arlington after he came home from Afghanistan, and he said, when that mother's baby's inside there, she wants a cowboy. She doesn't want, you know, somebody with OSHA training or something like that. And I'm not exactly sure how it was, but I remember he said, when somebody's baby's inside that house or their loved one's inside that house, they want every cowboy showing up on that job. It's just being smart. It's going, you know, man, you hit me with a question. It's hard. I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's,
no, it's all good. You're hitting it, man. It's like, it's aggressive, but it's attainable. You know, yeah, you're not doing anything dumb, but you're pushing the envelope of what other people in other departments might think is a little silly. But with your training and experience and your all's culture and the resources that you have, you're still going to go in and do the job that the community expects you to do. And
we had a crew run a mutual aid fire. It wasn't mutual aid fire. It was a fire in the county. The guys went, very, very bad conditions, did not have water at the time. They were going in and they faced some, just looking at their gear when they came out. They definitely went into some heat. Yeah. Those guys were going to do a job. They were there to do a job, and they went and they pushed everything to the limit and they got out. They could tell you everything that happened. They could tell you everything they did. They operated there in that, you know, right up to the edge of the black. They still knew where they were at. They knew what was going on. They weren't tunnel vision. They knew what was going on. They were cognitive and aware of what was going on. Their gear, how much air they had, how hot was the air getting in their mask when they were breathing, you know, and very careful not to break stuff, you know, break windows and create, you know, flashovers or anything like that or backdraft.
Yeah. No, that's super important. And I love the mentality of, I know we've kind of discussed mindfulness and mindset, and a lot of people can go into these like really rocking fires and they can come out, not pay attention to what's going on. They go in, they go out, they do their job, they leave, but they're not doing that own after action report. They're not being mindful of all the details and the intricacies and the curveballs that they're getting thrown. And you guys are doing the exact opposite, where you're mindful of every step of the process. So you know how far you can push and you know all the things that are happening to you as much as you can. You know, you are paying attention to the environment and that allows you to be more aggressive. You're pushing the envelope, but you're doing it in an attainable way. So that way, when you come out, it just solidifies what you all are doing. And whenever this does come out, it'll probably be right on the heels of me talking to some of my St. Louis buddies. I think it's just an awesome juxtaposition of like major city to where you're at in West Virginia with a 22 person department and even your surrounding areas. And there's still a lot of striking similarities and the mindset is still the same. Like you got a job to do. You have to be prepared for it. You have to be mindful of everything that you're doing and what's happening to the building and just your mind and body. And you're still going to make it happen. You know, you still got a job to do. So I don't know. I appreciate that sentiment, man. That's cool.
Yeah, our guys will go. That's one thing I will say is that when it's time, they'll go. They don't have a problem with it. I am kind of, I guess I could say I'm bragging about our department. We did have a guy whose gear showed up on Search Culture.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So, I mean, completely ruined. I mean, I say he ruined his gear. His gear definitely, it saved him. I don't think he was burned at all, if I remember correctly, but his gear was destroyed. And he was going in for confirmed entrapment.
Yeah.
And when he went through the door, forced the door actually fell and he fell over top the door into it, but he didn't quit. And, he did make it out. When he realized he couldn't see anymore, when he was getting ready to lose his face mask, he made it out. But he had a job to do. He knew what his job was, and he was going. He wasn't standing there, but was aware enough that when he realized that he had taken his gear to its limits, he had to go.
Man, that's incredibly important. Yeah, when you're at that level, you know you're in your last few minutes of that environment, but to maintain your sanity and calm and awareness in that situation I'm going to push everything I have. Man, that can't be understated. I think so many people would be in that situation and might come out early and then you're playing the what if game. But I think, don't mean to put words in the gentleman's mouth, but like everything that he did was validated. I don't think he has to be left wondering what if, cause he pushed it to every minute. So
hell yeah. Yeah, I saw that gear the other day. It was on something a guy out of it might have been St. Louis or Kansas City out that way somewhere. He was going in for a confirmed entrapment, and he self rescued himself, I believe, if I remember the article right.
Yeah,
but his gear was pretty toasted.
Yeah, right.
You could see on the back of his jacket exactly where his air pack was at because he discolored his gear and everything.
I
was like, way to go. I love that stuff. You know, that to me is, you know, I believe you touched on your seminar, you know, Danny would go. I think just about everybody in our department has a Danny would go sticker on their helmet. And we also have, after the guy from our department went, we end up making up stickers. Berkeley County would go for our helmets. But
that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, man, it's a different world out here. We do run a lot of fire out here. Not you know, big city, Baltimore, DC. You know, we're not engine 30 for sure. You know, the heights out of DC or anything like that, or truck 17. But we are we run a good amount of fire for the county's about 135,000 population wise.
Yeah.
I think it's roughly 108,000 square miles, I think is what it is. We run a pretty good amount of fire.
Yeah.
And I would say 75% of the county is non-hydrant.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, which is just presents so many other issues that most jurisdictions don't even have to experience. Yeah, that's wild, man. I know we've been banging around 45 minutes. I know I would love, I mean, I have like a whole page of notes here just from good stuff we're hitting on. I know that when some civil litigation stuff maybe clears up, I'd love to circle back with you and we can dig in even deeper with some of the other instances you've been involved in. But you're preaching the good word, man. Like you're doing and saying the right things. And I know you're trying to take care of your company, your county, your jurisdiction. And even though we may differ in degree, it's not different in kind of what we're doing. So it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if it's a city or if it's Berkeley, man, our purpose and mission are still the same. And you guys are doing everything you can to make it happen. So, John, man, with that, is there anything that you'd like to close on, whether it's personally, professionally, anything you got with Berkeley, the union? How would you like to wrap this up?
Okay. No, I'd say keep an eye on Berkeley County. We're going to be hiring here hopefully soon. We put in submitted a grant. You know, we have to be a department for 3 years before we can, and have numbers for 3 years before we can put in for that grant. This was the first year we were able to put in for a SAFER grant. The county did it on their own without any assistance from a volunteer fire station. I'm looking for 12 guys. We'll up staffing in at least 2 stations. We're hoping to get more.
Cool.
Go 24 hours around, you know, at all the stations. I know a lot of that is, you know, above me at the chief's level and so on at the commission. But 12 guys will do this department a lot, and we're just going to keep going from there.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I mean, we're going to be one of those places we don't have to run a medic unit out here. So that's a plus, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, we're getting ready to. They're getting ready to have some promotional exams, get some promoted other lieutenant. And then I think down the road, they're going to be looking at some captains to promote out there. And we have the fire chief. And he started, our fire chief here, he started ground level as a firefighter, running a single engine when they back. He'll kill me if you ever heard just 100 years ago, whatever. It's been about 19 or 20 years, if I understand the history right. But you know, he started out as a fireman working at single engine. They responded to everything in the county.
Yeah.
During the daytime when the volunteers were struggling.
Wow.
And he's been a part of building it up all the way. And now he's the fire chief, and he's you know, trying to get some good stuff going for us, trying to grow the department.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly comes with its challenges, but you guys are doing what you can. I mean, like you
said, it's weird because I think back you know, like DC and Baltimore and, you know, even like New York City, some of their legends out of New York City were volunteers at FDNY, you know, before they became FDNY. I was like, love to go back and talk to those guys and say, man, what was it like just trying to get started, trying to find the funding?
Yeah. Yeah.
To do it. And that, you know, that's a lot of what I do at the local level as president, is not only try to get funds for us to do stuff for charity work or for, you know, retirees when they come, or just to help out another brother somewhere if something, the unfortunate incident, but to try to find help our county commission find funding to fund and always going to be a red line. We're always, fire department's always going to be a deficit in the budget, you know, and how do you justify it, and where does the money come from?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we can say, hey, we're going to, you give me, you know, a couple $1 million, we're going to make you $4 or $5 million. It's not possible from a business mindset. You know, it's just not the way it works. So it's difficult because everything I've ever done in life has been, if I spend this much money, what's my return going to be on it?
Yeah.
The only thing I can say in the fire service, if you give me this much money, what's the return? Well, we can better our response time. We can better,
yeah,
you know, our safety practices on the fire ground. That's about all I got with it.
Yeah.
So I'm not, the guys that are counting the money, it's not really what they want to hear.
Sure. It's a continuous fight, man. Yeah. I completely empathize with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I understand. I mean, the more and more I dig into it, I understand it's the same problem in Houston and Denver, Baltimore, DC. They're always, everybody's looking for money all the time.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're going through that. Yeah. Even in my jurisdiction right now too, there's changes in funding and where, what money's coming from where, and we're fortunate we have a fire tax, and it's still, you know, money gets moved into different pots and taken from different pots, and it creates strain in other areas. So, and we are generally well funded. So it's, and it's, yeah, it's still a struggle. Like you said, it's hard to put money back into a, into that system when it's just always money spent for the community.
Yeah, we have what they call a fire fee here. It's an annual fee they pay, the residents of the county pay. And that goes to a fire board, which then gets distributed amongst the volunteer fire stations. And they, that money doesn't go into staffing at all. Trying to find the money for staffing is where our biggest hang up is on the career side of things. The municipalities, they were able to put in a sales tax, a 1% sales tax, which provides a lot of funding for them. Plus they have EMS fees and stuff like that. They can, they help supplement where we don't have any of that. This year we went to this, we went to legislative conference and we kind of pushed around a home rule tax or like a 1% sales tax to go to public service. I didn't really like the way it was written. They had to write it very vague to get it out, to try to hope it could grab some traction. The 1% sales tax within the municipality was kind of done in a dirty way. They were supposed to get rid of another tax. And when the legislation came out, it was only, they had to get rid of it by 10%. So there were some people that were upset about it because it wasn't presented truthfully, I'll say.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some, still some bad taste in Charleston over that, which is going to make it very difficult for us to push through the county level. But the estimate in Berkeley County is if they get that 1% sales tax, they'll bring about $19 million the first year.
Wow.
So I've been trying to work with the county commission to try to push that. And we have a primary coming up, I think, May the 14th.
Yeah. Yep.
So once the primary is over with, I think we'll be able to start pushing, you know, a little bit the politicians right now that we need to talk to. They're busy out there campaigning, banging doors. So once the primary is over, we see what's going to happen. We'll have a better understanding of what we, which direction we need to go in and who we need to talk to.
Yeah.
Try to get another bill written for next year.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. You're fighting a good fight. From my time on the executive board, I did almost 9 years, and it can be a thankless job sometimes, but it's a rewarding job. There's a tremendous amount of responsibility, but also purpose that are on your shoulders. And you're also, you know, husband, father, you're still running calls. So, you're doing a lot of good, man. I know sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but I appreciate it. Keep grinding.
Thanks,
man. I know we're banging on an hour. So we'll wrap it up, but dude, thank you so much for, taking time out of your day, especially on a shift day. We got lucky. Yeah. Thank you for giving us some good stuff, man. I know I'm going to circle back with you because you gave me a lot of things to think on, and, I know you got some crazy experiences too. So we'll do this again, man.
Anytime, man. Appreciate it.